You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. Get all those little pieces of paper. That is...
Some of my notes. See, I need those.
Nick Wright.
Good morning, Jenna Wolf.
Good
you look
morning.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
This is cheating. No, this is something you can put on your hand, take a test.
Absolutely. Check down. No doubt.
We got a great show for you today. LeBron and the Lakers might be stuck with what they've already got this season. Giannis might be gaining ground on Harden for the MVP, but we got to start with a big night for the Golden State Warriors. Big night on the court and then a memorable press conference off of it. They destroyed the Spurs by 39 points. That turned out to be a footnote to the bigger story. Kevin Durant, his post-game press conference, the first he's agreed to do in 8 days, lasted only 3.5 minutes. It took a turn for the worse when he was peppered with questions about his impending free agency. Take a listen to Kevin Durant.
We've noticed that you hadn't talked for a while. Is it anything to do with anything on your mind, or has it just been coincidence that you haven't talked for some time?
Why do you care?
Because you usually talk.
Well, I don't feel like talking the last couple of days.
It was anything in particular?
No, I just didn't feel like
it. Anything to do with conversation about free agency?
Yeah, that's the conversation you're going to have. I don't think about that type of stuff. That's your job.
You've obviously been around the noise for so long. Is it bothering you more this year? Is it louder this year?
It's unnecessary. You got to do Ethan Strauss, who come in here and just give his whole opinion on stuff and make it seem like it's coming from me. And he just walk around here, don't talk to nobody, just walk in here and survey and then write something like that. And now y'all piling on me because I don't want to talk to y'all about that. I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. They got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up. Grow up. Yeah, you, grow up. Come on, bro. I come in here and go to work every day. I don't cause no problems. I play the right way. Well, I try to play the right way. I try to be the best player I can be every possession. What's the problem? What am I doing to y'all?
You weren't talking to the media.
So? Who are you? Why do I got to talk to you? Tell me. Is that going to help me do my job better? Nah, bro. I didn't feel like talking.
I mean, how are you playing? How's the team playing in the last couple weeks?
I'm done. You know you don't care about that.
I just asked you.
All right, there's a lot there. See, let me start with you. What was your overall reaction to KD's comments?
Well, I'm not that surprised. But for KD, let me just tell you a few things. There's some language in your contract that tells you that you have media obligations. So part of you doing your job is not practicing your mid-range. It's not practicing your crossover. It's not just that. It's all these other things, too. Like, you have media obligations. There's a reason why we're talking about basketball, NBA basketball, more than any other time in my adult life we're talking about on the national airways. And the reason why is because the type of players that they have, fans are clamoring for more of what they have to say. So that's what they're trying to do, Kevin. Now, I don't know the local media there. I know there's some guys there that have a certain reputation, but that's in every city. But there's a certain obligation as a professional athlete, because I'm a fan of the game. Forget about those guys trying to hate on you. I'm a fan. I need to know more about basketball. And you know the reason why they should talk? Because they know more about basketball than us. And Kevin Durant and those others, LeBron, Steph Curry, they teach me a lot about basketball. So, Kevin, we don't want that part cut out as far as the media. If you want to make all this money, you want to be mega rich, the reason why you're making that money is because the popularity of the NBA. Because I know a day when the money was not like that in the NBA. I know a day when Michael Jordan saved the NBA. My brother was in the NBA at a stretch.
When the finals were on tape delay. And there was none of this discussion. So people need to understand some context here. KD hasn't talked in 9 days, or 8.5 days till yesterday. When did KD stop talking? Oh, right when the noise around KD and the Knicks reached a fever pitch, most notably right after the Porzingis trade. Okay? So that's when, because he wasn't being peppered with free agency questions at all, because he had made it clear, I'm not talking about that, which was a smart thing. And the only other time all year he's gone this long without talking was after the Draymond kerfluffle, if you will, right? Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, was sort of about this as well.
Absolutely. But the reason he is so mad at Ethan Sherwood Strauss, who covered this team before Kevin Durant got there, who I actually, by the way, I don't know Ethan, and I've had my own little tiffs with Ethan, okay? But he is an outstanding reporter. He used to work for ESPN, was part of the layoffs. The Athletic brought him back. Steph Curry tweeted when he got laid off what an abomination it was. He doesn't just speculate. He reports. What he included in that report is a fact. And that's the second thing that bothered Kevin Durant, which was it has killed KD dating back to 2017 when they won the championship that he did not jump LeBron in the hierarchy. That was in the article. That is what he is talking about. That is what is burning him. So the noise, first of all, on free agency, Kevin Durant was a pending free agent in 2016, and there wasn't this much noise. You know why? Because that season had some intrigue. We didn't know who was going to win. Could the Thunder do it? Mm-hmm. Could LeBron get back there
People
with the Cavs?
People cared about the actual basketball.
One of the devil's bargain with Kevin Durant going to the Warriors has been the intrigue has been removed. The most interesting thing to talk about the NBA is player movement because we know they're going to win. As a testament to Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and all those guys' greatness. That's first point. Second point is, and I know this. I am not speculating this. I know this. The biggest reason Kevin Durant went to Golden State was because people around him said and had been telling him since 2013 when he did the Sports Illustrated interview, I'm tired of being second. I was the second pick. I was second in the MVP. I was second in the finals. You're the best player in the world. The only reason you're not considered that is because you don't have a championship. Go get your championship, and everyone will say it. And he got his championship in the ideal way possible, beating LeBron, shot in his face, and nobody said it. And then he did it again, and people started wondering, oh, is he even the best player on his own team? And it has killed him. Fair or not, it's killed him. So that's what happened yesterday, was the speculation about the Knicks, which is part and parcel of the league.
Yep. One reason why you get really upset when you're an athlete is when they get close to the truth. Because we can always debate something that's just made up and everything, but something that's really close to the truth. And Kevin Durant, he told the guy to grow up. Kevin Durant should have grown up. How many contracts has he signed? How many times has he been a free agent? Why don't you watch LeBron and some of these others and what they say about free agency? Tell them at the beginning, I will talk when free agency, set a date, July the 1st. I'm not going to discuss it during the race. Then you can't get put in this corner where now you have to continually give people an update because you are a free agent and it is a big story.
Also, the things that he's complaining about, well, let me just do my job and play basketball. The reporters are there for the same reason. The reporters don't want to sit there and get hammered by Kevin Durant. They're there doing their job, asking the right questions.
And it was Jenna. And on the reporter point, the end of that press conference was an utter absurdity. He demanded you only ask me about basketball.
And then when they did, what happened?
He said, you don't actually want to care about this. No, they actually don't. You're correct. But you said that's the only way you're going
to
talk.
But, Nick, they beat the Spurs by 39 points last night. There's really nothing to talk about. They are far and away the best team in the West, the best team in the league. Like, right. There's no real hardened basketball to talk about. This is what people are talking about.
And when it is a total, to me, lack of self-awareness when he says, as one of the most famous athletes in America, as a guy who, and more power to him on this front, has been very public about how much he enjoys making as much money as he does, how much money. He told Chris Haynes when it comes to free agency, where can I make the most money? He and Rich Kleiman, his business manager, are trying to get on mogul status. Outside of basketball, enormous money. And that's great. But the reason the NBA is not, with respect, the NHL, is not just because the game's more beautiful. It's because we care about the people. It's because of the soap opera aspect. It's because of this part of it. And when we talk about Kevin Durant versus LeBron, there's all the on-court stuff. But see, there's also the off-court stuff, which is LeBron has had one bad public press conference. It was the one after they lost to the Mavs in the NBA Finals, and he basically said, hey, in the morning, at least I get to wake up and be LeBron James, and you suckers go back to your regular lives. And that has stuck with him a bit. It's 8 years ago. Kevin Durant can't take on, is not equipped, it would seem, to take on the scrutiny that goes with being the best player in the world.
Yeah, I'm going to push back a little bit on that. I don't think it's fair to KD. I think KD's struggling with some other things. How LeBron does his press conferences and everything, like, LeBron is special in himself. But to try to compare KD, how he's going to represent himself, like with all the burner accounts and all that, there is no comparison. So I don't think today is the day to compare what LeBron does on the microphone consistently compared to KD. KD just needs to understand that the arc of this league is dependent on its greatest players. He happens to be the second best player in the world. And to me right now, with LeBron being hurt, LeBron's not the best player in the world. Okay? It's talking about Giannis, KD, Steph, Harden. That's real talk. I watched LeBron play the other night. He is not moving like he was moving in the finals. So KD, should be the time that you should be thinking about. LeBron is begging for help. You're on the best team again. You could control some of this. Like, you don't have to act this way. But you need to realize, though, you should grow up and understand there are certain obligations. When you sign that contract, there's certain obligations, and some of those include the media. We went through this with Marshawn Lynch. I told him, you cannot talk, retire. Oh, he decided to retire. What did he decide to do?
Come back.
And what else was he? He was talking more than ever. He realized his brand could use that. So, KD, this is part of it. They have a job to do, and you have a job to do. And going home and coming back and going home, no, that's not just your job. There's other parts to your job that make the league better and allow you to have the type of success that you have now.
And you make a great point. At this point, right now, his brand could use a good dialogue with the media and an open and honest dialogue as well. Take a break. Coming up, talk some football. A Hall of Fame quarterback thinks that Kyler Murray is the next NFL star. That is next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports Channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back. Football, and let's talk some baseball. Let's talk both, because that's exactly what Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray is thinking about these days. He has a big decision to make about his professional future. Will it be the NFL or will it be the MLB? He got a major co-sign yesterday from Hall of Famer Warren Moon, who was speaking to TMZ Sports. Moon was asked if he'd be a great quarterback in the NFL. Take a listen.
The way the game is now, I think you really would. Yeah, the game has changed, and it's right up his alley. They're doing the things that he did in college.
Right.
And because they're doing those things, he'll just transition right into the NFL game.
CeCe, what do you think? Is Warren Moon right about Kyler Murray?
Well, this is the thing. And Warren Moon is like a lot of coaches. And talking to coaches and scouts, they're looking at things different. And it's time the NFL to start making some changes that the NFL on Sundays, it's starting to look like football on Saturdays. And if they're going to continue to do that, then some of the positional players are going to look like on Sunday like they do on Saturday. Now, there's a reason why as a undersized quarterback, you can thrive in college. It has a lot to do with how the hash marks are wider than the NFL. They're at least twice as wide. So the ball is typically placed to the wide side of the field. So if you have the ability to be able to run, you're not put into a phone booth like in the NFL because the ball's in the middle of the field. Also, the rushers. There's better rushers in the NFL, of course, and they're more disciplined. They're more disciplined to make that quarterback stay in the pocket. So with that discipline, height becomes a issue. Average NFL line, average NFL center is 6'2". Average NFL guards, they might be a little bit shorter, but 6'1 is the smallest, up to 6'5". NFL tackles, 6'4 to 6'8". Yeah. Now, you're talking about a guy potentially 5'10", 5'11", trying to throw as hard as it is to throw the football. Like, we've seen great quarterbacks. I'm talking about big guys, big, strong arms struggle in the NFL. Now, we would think that a guy that is hurt by what he can't see, and he's challenged because being in that pocket and being shorter, it does present a different set of challenges. Warren Moon's right, though. The NFL is going to start to because of the play calling. And number one is because they protect the quarterback. You can't land on the quarterback. So a smaller guy, he doesn't have to take the brutal punishment that the older quarterbacks had to, and because the game is more wide open, and because there's more plays that they know they can run right now and that transfer to the league that we didn't have before.
If he'll protect himself, because that's the other part of the quarterbacks that are elite level athletes, that make sure that you recognize what I got away with in college, I'm not necessarily going to get away with in the pros, and don't look to run immediately. Russell Wilson learned that early and has been brilliant at using his legs when he needs to and avoiding the big hits, because a lot of that protection you're talking about, that is eliminated once they get outside of the pocket, once they become a runner. Like, then they get treated more like a real, not totally like a regular football player, but more so than within the pocket. The question is, does he reach the minimum height threshold, and what is the minimum height threshold in 2019? Mm-hmm. That is, every discussion surrounding Kyler Murray is going to be about how tall he is, because we've seen the tape, we know what his arm is, we know what his athleticism is, we know what his production was, his intangibles, all of those, he checks the boxes. His winning, like, checks all those boxes. Maybe not the experience that would be ideal, mm-hmm. but aside from that, it's not like it's because he couldn't get on the field because he's behind a bum. He's behind Baker Mayfield. It's Drew Brees, or Baker Mayfield 6'1 listed. Drew Brees 6 feet. Russell Wilson's 5'11. Oklahoma says Kyler Murray is 5'9 and 7/8 of an inch. So let's call him 5'10. And I saw a picture of you and he from this weekend.
Yes.
5'10 checks out. So it's 1 inch shorter than the shortest successful quarterback we've ever seen. Is that the minimum threshold, or is Russell Wilson at the minimum threshold? That's the question. Because when C talks about the hash marks, it's everything he mentioned, and with the narrower hash marks, the linemen are also lined up more narrowly, more close together. So in college football, sometimes you're not throwing over offensive linemen. Sometimes you're throwing between them. Mm-hmm. In pro football, you're not. So, like, I'm really interested to watch it. I've said this. I like that style of quarterback just aesthetically. I like watching it.
Yeah.
I like that part of college football. So I will hope he is successful. My fear is the same it's been. He's not getting taller. His hair is growing, and that makes him appear to be a bit taller, but he's not getting taller.
So if you're a team, what are you factoring in whether you're going to spend a high draft pick on Kyler Murray?
Well, this is the thing about quarterbacks. They miss on quarterbacks every year. So why wouldn't someone take a chance to miss on someone with height? Like, I mean, do you think Buffalo thinks that they have it in Josh Allen? Or they still have question marks? Now, he's as big as they come. Yeah. Prototype, 6'5", big, strong, good athlete and everything. But is he the future quarterback? So, for me, you're going to miss anyway. Go ahead.
Quick question. As a wide receiver, is there a difference in the way a shorter quarterback throws the ball than the way a taller quarterback throws the ball? Does it only affect the quarterback position, or could it affect other positions?
The only way it affects the wide receiver is on when you're running routes that are shallow, coming across the middle of the field.
You can see.
And the reason why, it's not necessarily being able to see him, it's that the ball is coming out of nowhere. If I'm catching the ball from Troy Aikman, when Troy goes to throw the ball, I can see his hand come up. So this is like pitching in baseball. The sooner you can pick up the laces on a baseball, the better your chance of hitting it. As a wide receiver, the sooner I can pick up the ball or something that looks like, oh, that's coming my way. That's why I don't like the Patty Mahomes no-look pass, because I don't know what's coming. But it's one of those things, the more advantages you give me as far as seeing, and it's more right when you're coming across on those shallow crosses and the quarterback, because if not, the ball's coming out of nowhere.
Right.
So there is an advantage to being taller. Let's not try to make that out to be less than what it is.
Sure.
The more you can see, the more adjustments you can make. Yes, but I think it's very, very intriguing because we're going to miss in the next 5 years on quarterbacks that are prototypes.
Well, that's – I see.
Why don't we just go ahead and miss on a guy that – might be short, but has all the other things that you would want.
Your point, like, I think Josh Allen's a great one. Josh Allen checks a bunch of boxes, does not check the production, the winning, the stats. Mm-hmm. Kyler Murray checks all the boxes, does not check the physical ones, and Josh Allen was top 10 pick.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not saying Kyler can be that, but can he be a first-round pick because he's missing the height? I think he probably can be.
It's a good conversation. All right, coming up next, how much trouble are the Lakers in if they do not get Anthony Davis today? That's next on First Things First.
Hey, it's Nick Wright. No one should feel unsafe at home. Period. Fear has no place in a place like home. That's been Simply Safe's mission from day one. We cut out the middleman so you get award-winning protection at fair and honest prices. Simply Safe blankets your entire home with protection. Around-the-clock professional monitoring. Make sure police are on the way when you need them. Alarms that cry wolf? No thanks. Simply Safe's precision-engineered motion sensors detect the unique heat signature of humans, not pets. Simply Safe's glass break sensors are so precise, they can tell the difference between an intruder smashing a window and a plate breaking. The security sensors are so tiny, they blend in with your home so you won't notice them. This is security that is out of sight, but continues to give you a peaceful mind knowing you're protected. As more than 3 million Simply Safe customers already know, it feels good to fear less. So protect your home today. You'll get free shipping on any system order. Just visit simplysafe.com/FTF. That's simplysafe.com/FTF. To protect your home and family today, simplysafe.com/FTF.
On to the latest in the Anthony Davis trade talks. The Lakers are losing hope that the Pelicans will actually make a deal by today's deadline, mainly because they have yet to make a counter to any of the Lakers' offers. Nick, how do you expect the AD trade talks to play out?
Ever since this first came up, I've said all along it's a less than 50% chance Anthony Davis gets traded. As we're now hours from the trade deadline, less than 8 hours from the trade deadline, I say it's a less than 10% chance. It certainly appears the Pelicans, who never wanted Anthony Davis to ask for a trade,
nope.
Appears they never wanted to trade Anthony Davis. And what they were doing was, at best, just acquiring information so they know what the Lakers' offer is this summer when they do intend, I believe, to trade Anthony Davis because they're not going to have much of a choice. And at worst, a little more nefarious, and we can get into that at some point. But I don't think he's getting moved. The Lakers have offered Chris everything they can offer. If you're not going to take all the young guys and salary cap relief and multiple first-round picks, I mean, they're not going to include the Kareem statue. Like, there's nothing left to offer, and they haven't even responded to that offer. That tells me the Pelicans are not interested in making a deal.
Yeah, I don't think the Pelicans are interested in making a deal. Before the season started, they say they're not even taking phone calls with AD. Now, AD and Clutch Sports, they did force the hand of the Pelicans, and if I don't know at what point they came to the realization, but Clutch Sports and AD didn't do the Lakers a problem by only giving them this small window to be able to get the type of deal done, knowing that these other clubs, being Boston, could participate this summer. So it's a tough situation. If I was the Pelicans, I wouldn't be in a rush to trade them. But you know you got to move him this summer if you think that you can get better, because in this, you have to do something to put the Pelicans in a better situation that we're not seeing this in 7 or 8 years. If they were able to win the draft lottery, if they had Zion,
right,
could they get a guy to be able to stay there to be their franchise player? I didn't think they ever were trying to trade him, and based on what the Lakers offered, Because you know that Boston didn't offer Tatum. So the Lakers really only had the one legitimate offer. I do know that the Knicks, they did offer Kristaps to him. And they turned that down, didn't have an interest in him. But the Lakers, how much real time did they have to try to work out this deal? And you can't make a deal if you don't have, you need two parties.
And when Chris says Boston didn't offer Tatum, obviously Boston can't make a trade right now. But Boston, we know, didn't even say, we guarantee we will offer Tatum in the summer.
Dive in a little bit more, Nick, for us on why the Pelicans would even throw this out there if they were never going to make a deal with Anthony Davis to begin with.
So Brian Windhorst, who's a really, really plugged in NBA insider, who I actually talked to a couple nights ago about this situation, he believes, and this is, I mean, this would be borderline unprecedented. He believes the Pelicans responded to what they thought was Lakers tampering, because the Lakers have been dinged for tampering twice now, and they thought this was essentially an Anthony Davis, Rich Paul, Clutch Sports, and Los Angeles Laker coup against their organization by almost reverse tampering the Lakers, meaning letting the talks go on, encouraging the leaks, letting names, okay, so it's Ingram and Kuzma and Zoe who are on the block. Oh, it's and Hart and Zubats and all these guys. Letting all of that come in over the last 10 days, pollute the Lakers locker room just to have results like we saw against Indiana. Just to have total, you know what? You're going to create uncertainty within our franchise.
We're going to do the same thing.
We're going to do it to you.
Yeah.
And we're going to acquire information along the way. We're going to make it seem as if we are engaged in these talks to find out what your actual best offer is. So you have to bring us that actual best offer this summer, even if Tatum isn't available, even if Zion isn't available, even if it looks like this summer you do have some leverage, we will know what you were willing to offer a few months ago. And if it causes some mayhem within your organization, a small market team fighting back against a big market, a team fighting back against player power, all the better.
And CC, it seemed to have caused chaos within the Lakers locker room, the way they've been playing. I mean, if you're a player on the team and your name is constantly being dangled out there to be traded, basically everyone but LeBron, you would have to imagine it would disrupt team chemistry, disrupt the flow, disrupt the success of how a team is gonna be.
I mean, I'd like the Bills say that, but they weren't playing good before the trade rumors started. So they haven't been playing. They didn't play good without LeBron.
Without LeBron, sure, absolutely.
Okay, so where's this great stretch where these guys were playing great? No, that's the biggest problem here for the Lakers was LeBron getting hurt. Those 18 games that he missed, 19 games that he missed, because we liked the Lakers the way they were progressing. The younger players, even with the injuries, like we could recover if Rondo was hurt, as long as LeBron was there. But because of their position, now being out of the playoffs, there's more pressure because LeBron got hurt. If they hadn't, we wouldn't. We thought that this might take till the summer. We just wanted the Lakers to get in the playoffs, be a top four seed, potentially win a series. Those were the questions we were asking ourselves a couple months ago.
Well, that's it.
So what changed?
A couple weeks ago. That's the most interesting part of this is we spend a lot of time speculating about the Lakers, about LeBron. That up until 10 days ago, 11 days ago, last week Monday, nobody was saying if the Lakers don't trade for Anthony Davis this year, it's a failure. We knew it was a possibility, but we were talking about could they get Kawhi this summer? Would they trade for Anthony Davis this summer? The Kyrie stuff came up. Our perspective on it has changed because ever since Rich Paul and Anthony Davis made their public trade request, it's almost made it seem urgent. And then the Lakers playing poorly and falling in the standings has made it feel more urgent. That game against the Pacers has made it feel like it's almost a necessity. But 2 weeks ago, nobody was saying if the Lakers don't trade for Anthony Davis, they're screwed, even though right now that's what it feels like because of the disruption within the team.
And what is that screwed, if you will, look like? Not making the playoffs? What is a ruined season for the Lakers look like if they don't get this?
Let me tell you something.
Done.
Every day LeBron James plays on the basketball court, he's not playing for a championship. The Lakers and what they're trying to do, that's not the plan. And LeBron is not getting. I don't care what no one says. LeBron's mama, Nick Wright, LeBron James, it's going to come to an end someday. All right? And playing with a non-competitive team right now, because that's who they are. There's no chance they can win a championship. There's at least three teams in the West that would potentially sweep them. So that's the biggest problem. LeBron is aging. And they don't have, forget about two superstars, they don't have that other one superstar. And because LeBron got hurt, it accelerated. Clutch Sports making that announcement, it accelerated everything. But if Magic and Pelinka, if they're not careful, they were on the right path until the injury.
And so your point about not competing for a championship, I think they would have felt okay about knowing, listen, we're not equipped to beat the Warriors this year, had the team been taken where it was on Christmas morning and continued on that. Everything up until the injury, they had seemed to create some continuity. The young players were learning to play with LeBron. LeBron was deferring the first three quarters, taking over in the fourth. And now everything feels different. Now you wonder, are the Lakers going to make almost a panic move at the deadline because they think they have to shake some things up that could restrict their ability this summer to either sign a max guy or trade for Anthony Davis? I wonder if the Pelicans are sitting there saying, oh, well, whatever you offered us today is going to be there July 1st. What if one of those pieces they offered you today, they trade later today because they think they need to change something?
Or the Pelicans are taking a tremendous risk. What if one of those players get hurt? What if one of the players in Boston get hurt?
Sure.
What if Tatum gets nicked?
Right.
What if one of the players with the Lakers get nicked? So they are taking a roll of the dice. I think the Pelicans, they should have waited because then they can get all teams involved. They knew they were limited. They were faced with a time crunch. And all the teams can't participate in the Anthony Davis. If I was them with Boston out there, I wouldn't be in a rush to make a trade with the Lakers.
I agree I wouldn't have been in a rush. But even if it was all subterfuge, once I saw...
What does that mean?
If it was all tricks, if it was all misinformation, that they were never actually going to trade him, that once I saw how desperate the Lakers appeared to be, that I kept asking for more, and they were like, okay, fine. All right, it's two first-round picks and our three young players. All five young players, cap relief, and three first-round picks.
Okay,
the Lakers
fine.
Say, fine to that. Then you do have to have a conversation. Wait, hold on. Is this going to be the best offer we can get that doesn't involve Jason Tatum? And then the real discussion of what are the odds Jason Tatum is ever actually offered? Right. Like, those are discussions that I think the Pelicans would be having.
Well, if Jason Tatum's never offered, you really only got one suitor to make a trade. That's with the Lakers.
Right. Assuming the Knicks don't win the lottery, which is when the power could shift back to the Lakers, which is the only gamble the Pelicans are taking in this. Otherwise, they're saying we'll just wait till the summer.
Okay, so here's a question. Here's something we haven't talked about. The trade deadline is 3 p.m. Eastern today. Do you think there's a dark horse out there, another team that could sweep in for Anthony Davis at this point?
I think there are a couple teams that are going to call him. I'm sure the Rockets are going to call him and offer him the same thing they offered for Jimmy Butler. Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, and all the first-round picks. I don't think that gets it done. The Raptors I've been talking about throughout. I think the Raptors offering Siakam, OG Anunoby, Jonas Valanciunas, and some picks, knowing, hey, if we don't win the title this year and Kawhi leaves, we can trade Anthony Davis ourselves maybe for Jason
Tatum. But
would
the Pelicans make that deal?
That one, I don't think so. The one that I think is the best offer they could get, that if he's traded today and it's not to the Lakers, watch out for the Nuggets. Jamal Murray, I believe, is the exact same caliber player Jason Tatum. Michael Porter Jr. was a lottery pick out of Missouri who hasn't played because of a back injury. He was a projected top five pick before the back injury. And they have the salary space to make it work if they trade Miles Plumlee. And that team is right now second in the West. That team thinks maybe we can win a championship. If he's traded and it's not to the Lakers, watch the Denver Nuggets saying, you know what, we'll go for it this year. And then we'll move him ourselves this summer and recoup a lot of our investment.
Wouldn't that be something if he ended up not going to
Nobody
Lakers
saw Kawhi going to the Raptors.
You're right. No,
people didn't see Paul George going to OKC.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, Kevin Durant finally met with the media last night and things got spicy. That's next on First Things First. Time for your Subway Choice moment. Yesterday, the folks over at Pro Football Focus named Saquon Barkley the 27th best player this past season. They also named Odell Beckham the 36th best player. Despite these two great offensive weapons, the Giants missed the playoffs for the second straight year. All right, CC, let's talk a little football. What's the key to the Giants bouncing back now next season?
Yeah, for one, a lot of people are going to be shocked we're talking the Giants. I'm shocked we're talking the Giants.
I know, you have to, like, look at the – you're like, this is the
– I mean, yeah. The last couple of years it's been about, is Eli Manning, is he washed up? Last year, free agency, they signed Nate Solder, spent a lot of money. A lot of people thought their offensive line woes were going to be over with, and they realized that, man, you have to spend a lot more money on your offensive line to be able to put your offensive line together. The Giants right now are about star players. They don't have a bunch of glue guys. And the Giants, when they've been good, they've had a bunch of guys. Not necessarily their highest paid guys, but they had a bunch of guys that knew what they were supposed to do. Right now, the Giants, they are a team without an identity. They're a throwing team. They're a running team. What kind of team are they? Can they rush the passer? Like, they spent a lot of money on free agents on the defensive side that haven't panned out. So who are the New York Football Giants? They need this offseason, through Pat Shurmur, find a type of identity, find a style for which they want to play. And for me, it should go through Barkley. Barkley is a special, special running back. He has the type of speed and the type of girth that I believe the durability, like, not going to be a problem with him. I worried about that with the Penn State running backs because he wasn't a 25 carry a guy in college, but he showed me within that first rookie season, immediately, he can be that type of guy. He avoids a lot of big hits. He showed that he was very, very durable. He talks about being a leader. He talks about changing the Giants and how people look at the Giants. So, to me, whatever their identity is going to be, it should be surrounding their tailback because he's a special football player.
See, can he be the leader of the team in year two? Because I was so impressed. I've been impressed by watching him on the field, and we talked to him last week. I could see why you would have no concerns about drafting him as high as they did, no concerns about money or fame. He seemed so polished and just impressive as for anyone in their 20s, much less in their very early 20s. For a team whose leader obviously has been Eli for years and years, but Eli is on his way out, probably his last year within the organization, can he be the leader?
Well, this is the thing. Inside the NFL locker room, you need a number of leaders. A basketball team, you can have one or two leaders. But a football team, you need a bunch of leaders. It's no different than Ezekiel Elliott, what he did in Dallas, immediate impact, and he had leadership ability. Todd Gurley's a different guy. He's more of an introvert. But I believe that Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott, their ability to play at a high level, and Barkley, what he does, I believe he's a force multiplier. When you're around him, he's a different guy. When you talk to him, his conversation's different. He has a certain maturity about him. He has a certain direction about him. He has a certain authority when he says things. You know that when you ask him a question, he thinks about it before he responds. Those are things, and we saw that. We had him on the show Super Bowl week. So those are the things that, yes, it's natural. People say, yeah, I want to follow that guy because how he goes about being a professional.
Nick, the consensus coming into this past season was the Giants were going to compete. They had the pieces. We weren't sure we were getting Eli Manning, but they had the wide receiver. They had the running back. They had some semblance of a defense. What was the reason why they didn't?
Well, I know we focus on Eli and we focus on how often he was sacked. But the reality is there were a dozen quarterbacks in the league sacked on a higher percentage than Eli Manning. The Giants' offense was the definition of average, 16th in points, 17th in yards. They were middle of the pack. So why are they drafting in the top six? Because their defense, where a lot of their money is spent, was bad. Their defense was 23rd in points, 24th in yards, 30th in sacks of the opposing quarterback. That defense, they were not getting their money's worth out of them. Now, the offense didn't play like a Super Bowl caliber offense. The offense played like an 8-8, 9-7 team.
Yeah, the other wide receiver and the tight end, they didn't make that big bump in year two like we thought.
Right, absolutely.
I told you I was concerned about all Oklahoma wide receivers.
Right, and you were the Evan Engram, I thought, finally, at least different times, their tight end flashed the potential he had. And you were right about Sterling Shepard, like that he has not taken the leap that I expected and that I think a lot of people expected. But that's not why they won five games. They won five games because the defense was really poor, especially given the money, and they were awful in close games. This was a team that was, at the end of the year, they had back-to-back games. They lost by, I think, 1 point and then 2 points. They could not close out. They had a number of games where it looked like through the first half, oh, they're in control of this game. They went on to lose. So the inability to close out games and the defense could not get a stop at any point. That's why they weren't at least 8-8. Now, to get to the playoffs, to get to what we're talking about, Solder's got to play better. That second-round pick, Will Hernandez, he's got to be better in year two. Odell's got to play 16 games or at least close to it. And Saquon's got to stay at that level. That's without mentioning where Eli is at this point in his career.
All right, we'll take a turn on the other side. We are less than 8 hours away from the NBA trade deadline. Coming up next, should the Celtics break up their young core to bring Anthony Davis to Boston? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, look who's back. Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix. Didn't get enough yesterday. He's back here.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Did you get a haircut yesterday?
I did not.
Your hair looks nice,
trim,
though.
Trim, yeah, a little different gel.
Oh, okay, okay. You know. It looks nice.
You know what it looks better than?
It's not flammable, is it? Because I'm getting ready to throw some
flames. It's like the calm before the storm here. It's like,
you
know what it looks better than? When you had to shave your head because the Cavs made the finals last year.
Oh, okay. Here we go. On to the latest on Anthony Davis. While most of the talks are centered around the Lakers, don't count out the Celtics. It is being reported that while Boston refuses to promise New Orleans a specific trade package for AD, they do insist that no player is off limits. So, Chris Mannix, do you think the Celtics should break up their young core this summer to bring AD to Boston?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. And Nick, you did. You were excellent yesterday with the graphic, and I appreciate that.
I played a little trick on you. A little blind reveal. It's one of my favorite
things. As we're looking at what the Celtics should give up, I feel like we should toss that graphic up.
Okay.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander. So here are the numbers you
Do some producing. Yeah. Let's go, man.
Here are the numbers you tossed up yesterday. Well, that makes some sense. Look, Jaylen Brown, not so good.
Those are the season averages.
Now, we didn't throw up there were minutes, which I think is a big factor in all this. Let's toss up the per 36-minute averages, which a lot of NBA teams look at as being a reasonable statistic to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes Jaylen Brown, because he's, what is he playing, 25, 26 minutes a game?
Per 36 minutes averages, that's pretty close. Better rebounding numbers, comparable numbers across the board. Only Kyle Kuzma is a few points better. That makes those guys look like kind of the same type of player, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, which is, hold on, can we put that back if we could? Because I didn't know that was coming, but I enjoy this type of game. So if those are the per 36 numbers, you're right, it makes Jaylen Brown look way better than the per game numbers. But explain to me again why Jason Tatum's the best piece by far, why Jason Tatum's the blue chipper that is head and shoulders better than Ingram and Kuzma. Because if we're normalizing for numbers, for minutes, and their shooting percentage is about the same, explain that one to me.
The explain it is because typically the stats on teams that are losing more games are a little more inflated, and people in the NBA world, I know my brother called me yesterday, talking about, listen, man, when teams are losing games, you have to deflate them numbers that are guys that are playing on winning teams. So for your argument, that part is true. Where Boston is right now, you make a legitimate argument.
The numbers are more valuable
but
on a winning
not,
team.
You're not
no
even
doubt.
Really debating that Tatum is the top guy in that.
Like, no.
You're not. What you were debating was Jaylen Brown, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo.
Listen, Tatum, I believe, of those four players, and if we wanted to include Lonzo, but we don't need to, Tatum is the most valuable piece. What I am saying is if you want to go to just per 36-minute numbers to try to push – I don't understand the need to push up Jaylen Brown. What did the NBA world think when he was drafted third overall? Oh, that's a bit of a reach for an athletic defender. What was the book on him after year one? Oh, you know what? If he develops a jump shot, he could be better than we thought. And there was a time period last year where the Celtics were so injured that he was thrust into their, I would say, third option role, Tatum, Horford, Jaylen Brown, and he met the challenge for 4 weeks. And then he went back to being the guy we thought he was, an athletic defender who's going to be offensively challenged. I don't know why there's a need to act as if Jason Tatum's not in the trade, the Celtics have a great trade of players. They have a great trade of picks to offer if that's what New Orleans wants. But we can't act like Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and Daniel Theis is a great haul of players. Now, picks I'll listen to. I just don't think Jaylen Brown is one of the, I don't know, with respect to Bill Simmons, 75 most valuable trade pieces in the NBA. And that's, to me, what my eyes tell me and what the numbers tell me.
Look, I think he has a higher upside than Kuzma. I think he has a higher upside than Ball. I think offensively he's better than you give him credit for. I think he struggled this season, but if you look at the numbers in January, when he started to figure it out, he's been considerably better. Now, you asked the question about what should the Celtics do? How deep should they go? I think there are two philosophies. If this goes by, and I think it's going to go by the trade deadline with Anthony Davis still in the Pelicans, there are two positions the Celtics have to take. One, if they believe, and they'll spend the next 3 months figuring this out. If they believe that Kyrie Irving is back and that Anthony Davis will ensure that Kyrie stays and that Kyrie staying will ensure Anthony Davis is going to be there, it's a Jason Tatum-centric package.
Absolutely.
If they have to. They won't start with that. But if they have to, they put that chip on the table and they make that deal. The flip side of it, though, is that if Kyrie's, like, gone, if they decide, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if Kyrie says, I'm going somewhere else, then I think you pull kind of all the way back and you go back to that team that you saw at the end of last year. You keep Terry Rozier around long term and you build around Tatum, Brown, keep Gordon Hayward around and build that way. I mean, that is probably the two ways you're going to go. The more likely remains.
That doesn't sound real exciting.
I went to a conference finals.
Wait a second. Sorry.
So you're saying we're going to go in this era where Danny Ainge had all these picks. They go out and get Gordon Hayward. They trade for Kyrie. And now we're saying in 2019-20, who's the team? Say that again.
Well, that's the
Tatum.
You're asking for situations. The backup plan is that. That's not the first plan. The first plan is, and the plan that they believe is
right.
going to
it's
work.
Kyrie and AD.
Is Kyrie and AD. They believe that's going to work. But if this all self-destructs, which some people, like you, think is going to happen, that's
and all it takes for it to self-destruct is Kyrie leaving. All it takes is one of the more, let's call it, unique players in the league. I wish I could put my tweet on the screen. I tweeted this 3 days ago, and now it's happening in real time. I cannot wait for Anthony Davis, Kyrie, Gordon Hayward is going to be the best big three in the league to transition seamlessly to. Tatum's going to be an MVP. Jaylen Brown's wicked underrated, and we still got Marcus Smart.
Educated Blake's going to say that though. Like that, it would be.
I feel like that's what you just said.
No, you asked. I was asked the question.
Thicker.
I was like, here's the backup plan.
And then build
you take
around
all,
him.
You take all these draft picks and then try to deal for somebody else down the line. You have to. You still put yourself position. It's not. Look, if that happens,
we didn't have
nobody
a show
should
two
be saying.
Years ago. But wasn't that the theory?
What?
Oh, we're going to save all these picks and trade for a big star down the road. Now we're getting ready to sell that to the Celtics fans again?
No, this is the big star. Anthony Davis is the big star. But
and
if
Kyrie
it all
was
apart,
the big star.
And
that
they got
traded
Kyrie
for.
Irving. So it has worked a couple of times. And they've built the team to this point. Look, this was just the backup plan. And I don't think anybody would say that it's not a failure. It's a failure if they don't get Anthony Davis and Kyrie walks away. It's just that's what they'd probably turn to.
They're not barren of assets.
No, I understand that part of it.
So all of this is predicated on Kyrie staying. Are they going to spend the next couple months just focused on that? Because that brings AD in, and that maybe guarantees AD stays longer than a year.
It's a weird dynamic to be in because, yes, the front office is going to do that, but they know that how the season ends is going to have a big impact on that. If they get beat in the first round by somebody, that's not going to be a good thing. If they go to the NBA Finals, I don't know that Kyrie Irving walks away from that either. So
you say the first round, I think everyone, even though I'm lower on the Celtics than most, now that the Pacers don't have Oladipo, there's four real legitimate contenders out east. They're going to end up the top four seeds. So yes. I don't think anyone thinks a first round exit's possible. But that second round of the East is going to be monstrous for everybody. Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, and Philly, they're going to be playing each other. And so a second-round exit for any of those teams is on the board. But can I circle back to something you said earlier, which really surprised me? You said that even if Kyrie's there, that you don't think the Celtics will start with Jason Tatum being available. Why not? And Danny Ainge, I know he's full of confidence, but there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. I got to learn that every day myself. Like, what in the world makes Danny Ainge believe he has any reason to call up New Orleans and make an offer that doesn't include Jason Tatum?
For the same reason the Lakers didn't go all in on their first round of offers. You don't do it right away. I mean, look, they know that it may ultimately cost them Jason Tatum, but I think they'd like to explore
first. So are you
first.
Of the theory there's a deal done without Jason Tatum? Forget about Boston right now.
No, I don't think, no.
Okay.
I personally don't think.
Well, let's talk about that then, because you're not getting Anthony Davis without Tatum. Like, regardless of the art of negotiating, like, that's not going to happen, because that's not a better deal than what the Lakers offered.
And I think that if the – and
I think that's up for debate, but
–
It's not up for debate that the Celtics can offer a same package without Jason Tatum than the Lakers can?
Their draft picks are considerably better.
It's only on if the Pelicans, if they change what they've said, which is they want an all-star caliber player, and they transition to we want the best picks possible, then sure. If the Pelicans are saying what we want is the 2021 Grizzlies pick, and we want those picks, fine, but that's not what they've been saying.
What about the little wrinkle of we'd like to stick it to the Lakers? Maybe this isn't the best deal we'll get from the Celtics, but can you imagine if AD ends up with Boston and not with the Lakers, which is a little bit of what Brian Windhorst was sort of saying, that right now they've sort of dangled this idea of maybe trading.
If I was the Pelicans, I wouldn't be concerned about maneuvering around the Lakers. I'd be more concerned about a couple years, am I going to be in Seattle?
Just quick.
Okay, that's what I would be.
They got to make the best deal.
Exactly. Look, just to be clear about what I think the Celtics would do is that they would start with a deep pick-centric package, probably Jaylen Brown. And then if it goes to Tatum, I think they'll turn around and say, okay, but we got to take some of these picks out of it. It's a negotiation. Like, there'd be two separate offers, and they'd want to retain some of their draft assets if they're putting the top player in this mix.
And when they don't get him, we're going to hear by somebody that works for the Boston Herald, oh, my God, Danny Ainge made the greatest offer, and he just barely missed out, like we heard on every trade up until Kyrie Irving.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.